You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 26th of January, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, so that means we have geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org with us today. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing extremely well, largely because my wife got her staples out yesterday, and there is an excellent chance she does not have any more cancer in her system. So it's been a good day.
That is a fantastic day. That is certainly something to celebrate. And I'm very grateful that you are taking time out of your day here to join us to talk about Turkey and Russia. We're going to have a change this week. We're not going to be talking so much about Ukraine. And we're going to be using an article by a lady called Lydia Miznik, who is writing at RT. She says, 5 years ago, Turkey's Operation Olive Branch started off with massive airstrikes, columns of armoured vehicles, tanks with infantry support, and special forces clearing up the Syrian territories. The Turkish military entered a region where Russian troops had been stationed just a day earlier, and the incident severely strained relations between Moscow and Ankara. But despite this, Russia and Turkey did not break off ties. Amidst conflicts in Syria, the Caucasus, and Ukraine, both sides resorted to compromise and continued holding a constructive, mutually beneficial dialogue. In this article, Russian Turkologists explore how Moscow's former enemy and one of NATO's oldest member states became one of Russia's most stable partners. And just before we get into this, I mean, it doesn't mention this here, but wasn't there a coup that was being plotted in Turkey? And wasn't it Russia that warned Erdogan about this coup? And isn't that really the reason why Russia and Turkey now have such a close relationship? Matt, do you remember what I'm referring to here?
Yeah, we've spoken about it indirectly once or twice. There's a lot of different theories about this, but the more important thing is that it led to a huge purge of not just the Turkish military, but the entire intellectual, journalistic, and financial establishment, that anyone who even had a slight connection to that. I mean, the coup was very weak. You know, it didn't last. I think there were a couple of bridges blocked, and that's it. At least in military circles, Erdogan is pretty popular. But the economic crisis has hurt him. So you had those in America who don't trust him. We also talked about the some years ago when the Turks shot down a Russian fighter in the Syrian conflict. We thought now Turkey and Russia were going to be enemies forever, but that was that problem was solved. And in fact, they're involved in peace talks over the Syrian issue, which is something that bothers the United States. At this point, the neocons despise Erdogan for a whole bunch of reasons. And because Turkey is often being treated the same way Russia is economically, we'll talk about more about that in a minute. And he has an election, unfortunately, in 2023. His popularity ratings have dipped because of the economic crisis. But now the role of the coup there, I don't know. I have the feeling that Erdogan blames the West for it, and it's probably – there was some kind of a – it was a modified version of a color revolution. The U.S. certainly were in on it, and Russia was aware of this and warned him. And yes, that was the start of a friendship, but they go back and forth And Putin respects that because he's not going to be a lackey for anybody, whether the East or the West. But now I think largely the West has washed their hands of him, and it's just a matter of time now before he drops out of NATO.
Just before I continue with the quotes here, wasn't there rumors that Russia was going to be sending a missile defense system to Turkey? And obviously Turkey can't accept this because they're a part of NATO. Obviously, what happened there? Did Turkey turn this down? Are they still expecting this missile defense system? Do you recall anything about that?
Well, I know this was a while ago, but we had at least one or two shows on that topic. In fact, we had a period of time where we talked about Turkey a lot because how quickly they went from a temporary enemy of Russia to now an ally, even more now an ally. Part of the Turkish military does have Russian and Chinese-made equipment. And that was really the beginning of the end as far as the West's interest in Turkey. The economic – I mean, Erdogan himself says that the economic crisis there that started in 2018 was created by foreign forces as almost a what we call the hybrid war against Ankara. Right now, their membership in NATO is symbolic. There is no way they're going to ever be an EU member, which the EU has stated recently. So much of what he's been saying over the last few years has sounded just like us. But the sticking point is the confrontation in places like Afrin and just north of Aleppo in Syria. But that's something that can be easily solved because largely these are anti-Turkish drives rather than against Damascus. So Russia can advocate for Damascus without angering Turkey all that much. So either way, the U.S. is extremely upset, and there's sanctions on Turkey to this day, and that's where it got started. The military equipment is where it got started, and there are increasing amounts of Russian equipment now and Chinese equipment presently operational in Turkey.
Well, it does seem that Turkey's issues with Syria really revolve around the Kurds rather than, as you say, Bashar al-Assad. Well, the Turkish army began Operation Olive Branch on January the 20th, 2018, as a response to the shelling of border territories from the Syrian side. The operation took place in Afrin, the northwestern region of Syria, inhabited mainly by Kurds. It was directed against detachments of the Kurdish People's Defense Forces and the Democratic Union Party founded by the Kurds. By doing so, Turkey affected the interests of the Russian armed forces, officially stationed in Syria at the request of the Syrian government. A year before the start of Operation Olive Branch, Russia introduced into Afrin a group from the Center for Reconciliation of Opposing Sides, and the presence of the Russian military became a sort of security guarantee for the Kurds. At the start of the operation, for security reasons, the Russian armed forces were transferred to the southeastern part of the province, particularly to the Tel Rifat area on the road to Aleppo. The Kurds assumed that Russia had given the green light for the attack. Ankara's operation began with the massive bombing of Afrin, although the S-400 missile defense systems located at the Russian Khmeimim airbase could have prevented this. Russia clearly had no intention of using them against Turkey. It is difficult to imagine a conflict between Russia and Turkey, which is part of NATO. Should Russia have shot down Turkish planes? That's just not possible, said military expert Vladimir Evseev at the international media group Rossiya Segodnaya Roundtable. Following the conclusion of Operation Olive Branch, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said that Turkey would continue conducting military operations throughout a large part of North Syria. What this practically meant was that the Syrian issue would jeopardize Russian-Turkish relations on more than one occasion. One of the critical moments came in January 2020, when, backed by the Turkish army, the militants tried to break through the positions of the Syrian government army. The attack was repulsed by Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's troops with the help of Russian aerospace forces, and this critically strained the relations between Russia and Turkey. World politicians were alarmed by the situation and the likelihood of a real military conflict between the two external powers. However, negotiations between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Erdogan eventually put an end to the tensions. And we have a we had a mention here of this S-400 missile defense system, didn't we, Matt, that Syria has actually in Syria, but the Russians didn't use it against the Turks. What do you make of what's being said here?
First of all, the Turks never accepted the Arab opposition against Damascus. The CIA was involved so heavily. And of course, there were the CIA is also mobilizing the Kurds. They, of course, don't have a state. Any state within which they live ends up hating them. That's Iraq, that's Syria, that's Turkey. The Turkish war against the Kurds, backed by foreign powers, has been going on for decades now. And foreign funding is what keeps them going. So the author here is very careful to say artillery fire from the Syrian side, not from Syrians, but from American supplied Kurdish artillery, or could, simply could have been accidental. They were just looking for an excuse, because the Russians and the Syrians are well aware that the Kurds are American proxies. With Erdogan's rejection of the Arabs, he created his own Turkish-trained forces in that part of Syria. So now you have three sides in this civil war. The Kurds are going to lose this again, because no one but the U.S. wants anything to do with them. And that's why Russia didn't use its own defenses, because this was an anti-Kurdish operation. And because it wasn't directed directly at Damascus, even though it irritated Assad, this three side war, which the Americans and the CIA started, and now has become an international war, it's easy to use two sides against one. So because this was considered an anti-Kurdish rather than an anti-Syrian invasion, and it was about a year. It ended in, February or March of 19. Russia had a place to stand on, because he was aware this really wasn't about Assad. They do want to make peace. They do want to withdraw all forces and have Assad take over again. But Assad's going to have to make guarantees to Turkey about the Kurds. No one likes them in all the countries in which they're a minority. So he'll have no problem with this, but this means a lot more to Turkey than it does Syria, because there's a huge Kurdish minority there that the Turks consider Turks, mountain Turks, they call them. Of course, the U.S. rejects all of this, has been financing the Kurds, which was including mostly a communist insurgency, that's what they say, with American money. And despite the fact that some of these groups are considered terrorist groups, the U.S. may have them listed. But that doesn't really – that's just a formality. That list doesn't mean very much. So that's why the Russians weren't going to respond here. Russia will take the side of Assad, but they also have to provide certain guarantees to Turkey about a very well-armed Kurdish militia that the U.S. created.
Well, I can remember American Antifa organizations boasting of the fact that they had been out training with these Kurds. They certainly are supported by the left-wing elements throughout the Western world. Well, there's also a Caucasian issue, isn't there, with Nagorno-Karabakh? Contradictions between Moscow and Ankara aren't limited to Syria. A painful issue for both sides has recently sprung up in the Caucasus, where for several decades Armenia and Azerbaijan have been engaged in an armed dispute over Nagorno-Karabakh. The Turkish leadership has openly supported the Azerbaijani side, while Russia is trying to preserve peace in the region through mediation and diplomatic negotiations. Yet even in such circumstances, there is space for dialogue between Moscow and Ankara. A striking example is the work of the Joint Russian-Turkish Monitoring Center, which has been monitoring the ceasefire regime in Nagorno-Karabakh following the end of the 44-day war in 2020. The centre isn't always successful at preventing tensions. For example, the conflict flared up once again in March 2022, when, according to Yerevan, villages on the territory of Karabakh were fired at by the Azerbaijani military. However, the situation in the region is so fragile that it can be aggravated without a single shot, In mid-December, an Azerbaijani group that called themselves environmental activists blocked the Lachin Corridor, which is under the control of Russian peacekeepers. The protesters stated that they oppose the illegal extraction of natural resources by the Armenian authorities on the territory of the unrecognized republic and require Azerbaijani officials to inspect the local mines. The corridor, blocked by the activists, is the only road connecting Nagorno-Karabakh with Armenia, which de facto places the unrecognized republic under blockade. Vladimir Putin and Recep Erdogan have not yet discussed the issue. Their last discussion on the topic of Nagorno-Karabakh took place on November 1st, 2022. The Russian president then informed his Turkish counterpart about the results of his trilateral meeting with Azerbaijani President İlham Aliyev and Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan. However, the leaders of Russia and Turkey maintain regular contact on another conflict, which for Moscow is currently the most pressing issue. And we'll get to that in a bit. We'll just pause here with this Nagorno-Karabakh conflict. I think one of the interesting things about this is this is Christians against Muslims, isn't it? The Armenians are Christian. The Azerbaijanis are Muslim. It does have the potential to flare up. And we have seen mistreatment of the Armenians. But it seems to have quietened down again now. What do you make of what they're saying here, Matt? Because, I mean, this is two countries that are at war, and you've got Russia and Turkey supporting the opposite sides, haven't you?
Well, this gets very complicated, far more than you'd ever read in the basic press in the West. We had a couple of shows on this war back in 2020. Armenians have always been very pro-Russia, except that there's a huge Russian energy infrastructure in Azerbaijan. Now that, because of the sanctions on Turkey and Russia, the energy relationship between Turkey and Russia has increased substantially. There's a huge boost in Russian exports since so much of the Turkish economy is now under sanctions. What makes it complicated is that not only did Turkey back Azerbaijan, in fact, there were almost exclusively Turkish weapons, despite a huge pro-Russian maybe plurality in the country, but Israel and the U.S. backed the Azerbaijani side. And we talked about this at some length, where the Israelis see Azerbaijan as a northern outpost to attack Iran, which is why it's essentially now being colonized, despite the fact that there's a substantial Russian presence there in terms of infrastructure. But now that Turkey has been sanctioned, that's become less pressing. And now that the relations between the two countries are now substantially close, that conflict may not be as fragile, as they say here, as it was before. So Azerbaijan is a very complicated place, and it's one of these Johnson's Law places that no one knows anything about. But the Israelis for a long time thought – that's why they built up the Azerbaijani forces just like they built up the Israeli one. I'm sorry, the Ukrainian one, for the sake of creating this Israeli outpost in just north of Iran. And border, has a long border with Iran. But I'm not sure that's really functional anymore. Depending on what Erdogan does. But I don't, he's being sanctioned. He despises the West. He's blamed them for so many of these problems, arming the Kurds, destroying the economy. I'm not sure a reconciliation there is possible. But I do also want to comment on this environmental thing. We've covered this. These environmental groups are NGOs financed by the West. That this issue suddenly arises. This has been going on for a long time. Only now they mobilize these environmental organizations that demand Azerbaijani intervention just where Russian peacekeepers are is ridiculous. Of course, there's no all the pictures I've found online, about half the signs are in English and the others are in Russian. So they're clearly aiming it at two markets having nothing to do with the local problem. We've seen these environmental movements, which are incredibly wealthy, supported by every Western government, every Western corporation, now being used kind of like ISIS used to be, to support Western foreign policy aims. Typical NGO stuff, but in this case, they can mobilize people. This may be a new form of color revolution, but you have to be an idiot to think that that mine has anything to do with why this protest was mobilized.
Well, currently the most pressing issue is, of course, Ukraine. The president of Turkey is almost the only mediator in the conflict, at least in the matter of prisoner exchanges between Russia and Ukraine, which take place with the direct participation of Ankara. It is worth noting that Erdogan asked Putin to assign Ankara the status of an official mediator in the Ukrainian crisis, even before the start of the Russian military operation. We support the establishment of peace in the region, especially in the matter regarding the Crimean Turks. We have repeatedly discussed these issues with our Russian friends, and especially with President Putin. We don't want the region to be a territory dominated by war, the President of Turkey said at the end of last year. However, Moscow hardly sees Ankara as a mediator after its participation in the anti-Russian Crimea Platform Summit organised by Kiev and the supply of military drones to Ukraine, actions that clearly deprived it of neutrality. So, I mean, they're offering succour to Russia's enemies here. And what is this bit here about these Crimean Turks, Matt? Do you know what's being referred to there?
Well, the Crimean platform was 2 years ago. It was financed by the United States. I mean, you know, Kiev can't organize anything. They're a colony. They function as an administration for Washington. Turkey was involved, and but that's also around the same time Turkey was kind of kicked out of the Western camp. They did supply drones early on. But Erdogan, once this all these other events started happening and the crisis there got deeper, that's not the case anymore. Remember, the Crimeans initially were a Turkic people. You know, going back to the late Middle Ages, that became one of the most pro-Russian areas. So you have a mix of people there, united by the fact that they just don't want nothing to do with Kiev, and are some of the most loyal of all the ethnicities within Russia. So. Because it's developed so quickly since it was voted to become part of Russia, Erdogan has no problem with this. I think maybe he wanted a voice just in case. But if this were to happen today, I don't think he'd have anything to do with it. But even if he did, it would be he doesn't want to be seen as a client of anybody, either NATO or Russia. Kind of like what Belarus does. Every once in a while, they'll do something against their friend's interest, almost as a way to say, you know, we still have our own interests here, and they might not be identical to yours. I don't know what the Turkish role at this thing was. It's completely. I mean, there's no support for it in Crimea, and Crimea now is. Well, the media is controlled in Ukraine, but for a long time, it was seen as what Ukraine could be if it was under proper. Control and rule. So, if anything, there's an attempt to immigrate to Crimea from Ukraine, which is an embarrassment. No one wants to talk about. So, those issues aren't relevant anymore. When the West kicks you out, at least for the medium term, they're kicking you out. They're at war with Turkey economically now, and it's conceivable that this may be a hot war as far as Syria is concerned, depending on how far the U.S. are going to defend their Kurdish client. So this, you know, it doesn't bother me like it did at the time. I think we talked about this at the time a couple of years ago. And for Turkey now to try to be as neutral as possible, especially 2023, that's a definite possibility. And it's important for Russia because, of course, Turkey technically is a NATO member.
Well, there's also the trade and economics that there are between Russia and Turkey. Despite the many contradictions between the two countries, they have managed to maintain a constructive dialogue and friendly relations. One of the major factors is the economic interdependence of Moscow and Ankara, which has grown rapidly over the past few years. Between January and September of last year, the trade turnover between Russia and Turkey topped $47 billion, which is twice as much as in the first 9 months of 2021. This is mainly down to Moscow using Ankara to replace official imports from Western states. The dialogue between Russia and Turkey is based on an extremely high level of cooperation in trade and economics. This is a key aspect. Turkey has set a record in exports this year, and a significant amount of goods has been exported to Russia. Lacking this, the Turkish economy would be in much more unfortunate state than it is now. Viktor Nadin Rayevsky, senior researcher at the Institute of World Economy and International Relations, told RT. Moreover, Turkey is dependent on Russian energy resources. Despite the Anadolu News Agency reporting that Ankara started substituting Russian gas and turning to other suppliers. As per the monthly report of the Energy Market Regulation Authority, the Russian Federation still retained a leading position in this field. Nadine Rayevsky also considers Russia's construction of the Akuyu nuclear plant in Turkey an important factor in the relations between the two countries. The plant is being built on the southern coast in the Mersin province. This is the first nuclear power plant built in the Republic and the first project in the global nuclear industry implemented according to the Build, Own, Operate model. The corresponding agreement between Russia and Turkey was signed in May 2010 and project costs are estimated at about $20 billion. The construction costs are covered by Russia without the investment of Turkish capital. The debt will be paid off through the supply of electricity paid by Turkish consumers at pre-agreed prices. This model is quite profitable for Russia. We are turning Turkey into a gas hub, which will supply Europe with gas. This is a great opportunity for Turkey, since as a distributor of resources, it will have a word in determining prices, and the Turks definitely will not be selling themselves short, the expert said. So you've got two bits to do here with energy, haven't you? Nuclear energy, plus you've got the gas that they're selling on. And I think Britain's probably going to end up buying the gas from Turkey. I mean, now that we've sort of said we're going to have all these sanctions on Russia, it frees Russia up to sell their resources to these other countries, and then these other countries sell them back to Europe at a much inflated price. So, I mean, if Russia was to fall out with Turkey here, they've got this important nuclear power station that's being built. But we shouldn't say that that's not going to happen, because of course you had Russia building Nord Stream 2 with Germany, didn't you? And yet they still just cut things off. Do you think the same thing could happen here with this nuclear power station, Matt, or do you think the friendship is too close for that to happen?
Well, part of it depends on what's going to happen in the election this year. The economic crisis, of course, as always, has the Western banks as the cause. When Erdogan was elected, he poured a lot of public money into construction, with the understanding that their trade with the West will recover from the 2008 disaster. You know, he took power in 2002, 2003, and that didn't happen. And they kept interest rates low, like the U.S. did, which meant that the debt simply piled up. And then once that money left, it all came due, the initial debt came due, I think it was around 2018, they were left with no money. They were left with a lot of foreign denominated debt. The lira began losing value. And because of Turkey's tilt to Russia, for the most part, I've actually published on this, the ratings agencies, Moody's and Fitch, they're highly politicized. They began downgrading a Turkish credit rating. So money really began to leave. The Moody's and those rating agencies are Russia couldn't be any more healthy fiscally. And even before the sanctions, they were downgrading Russian bonds, despite the fact that they were far better off than the U.S. or the U.K. is. So these are entirely politicized ratings, but unfortunately, they're taken seriously by investors. So weaponizing the ratings agencies meant that it cost a lot more money to invest in Turkey. And on top of all that, you have two issues. You have the increasing sanctions on Turkish steel, for example, and something like 8 million Syrian refugees living in Turkey. And that's probably the number one issue. Every political party in the Turkish spectrum wants to kick them out. The media there is that they're cowards. They left their country. These are all military age males. Really a fifth column, because Turks and Arabs don't get along, have never gotten along. So they're in dire economic straits with very high inflation. A lot of these homes that were built that now have no one to buy them. It's, really an American style depression. And that's the number two issue in Turkish domestic politics. So the way out for both countries, both Russia and Turkey, is to build a tremendous relationship with each other. Azerbaijan is now going to be a big part of that. So this is where all the peace feelers are. That's where the talks, whether it be over Syria or Azerbaijan, Armenia, are concerned. So once this infrastructure is built, there's no reason for Turkey really to have anything to do with the EU anymore. And even if they sell the natural gas, which anyway is a separate issue, at an inflated rate, and so both countries profit tremendously, it's still going to be cheaper than what the U.S. can provide across across the ocean. And the infrastructure doesn't really exist for that anyway. And this is what makes Turkey a very good mediator in Ukraine, or and what makes Russia a good mediator in Syria and the Caucasus. So this is actually, you know, this is one more example of sanctions and just the bumbling of the U.S. and the EU, a complete backfire, because they're building a relationship that can get Turkey out of its economic slump by having a and he's, you know, don't forget, Erdogan has taken over the central bank, saying that you have too many foreign foreign actors trying to raise interest rates, and he was completely opposed to that. And he's thrown out a lot of the financial elites. You have a faction in Turkish politics that wants to bring the IMF in, and Erdogan will die. He'll create his own coup before he allows that to happen, and the deindustrialization of the country, because, you know, this is what the IMF will demand. It'll then become a satrapy of New York and Brussels. So he's in a rough spot, but this is a huge flashpoint as far as the East-West clash is concerned. So I don't see Erdogan, if he's reelected, to go back to the West. If he's not, and there's a color revolution or something like this happens, Turkey will be under the IMF austerity. It will be deindustrialized. It will be right back to the third world again. And this is considered a victory for the West. So these issues are extremely complicated. I mean, we don't have a lot of time to get into every little detail, and I'm trying to fit a lot into a very short period of time. But that's the outline of it. So the reason I picked this article, the reason I picked this topic, is that we used to talk about it a lot more, and we should start talking about it more again, because Turkey is enormous, both militarily and economically. First world country, of course. Now, wants nothing to do with the EU, will probably leave NATO. I don't see what their role is anymore, and no one trusts them. So American foreign policy in the Middle East is going to change radically without Turkey. Turkey was the anchor for a lot of this. And you have another example of nationalism, both economic and political, under Erdogan. He is anything but a perfect ruler, but he does put Turkish interests first. And right now, that's an alliance with Russia, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They were rejected from BRICS back in 2018, but that may change, especially if Brazil gets kicked out of it, which may well happen with this fraud that was allegedly elected there. The first BRICS member to condemn the Ukraine operation is, of course, this idiot. So things may be changing, and at least as far as the Middle East, the Caucasus, Turkey is going to be a major part of it.
So we have very close trade and economic ties. And finally, we also have the personal relationship between Putin and Erdogan. In addition to economic cooperation, Russia and Turkey managed to build trusting relations and constructive dialogue thanks to mutual respect, says Amor Gagiev, a member of the Institute for Oriental Studies of the Russian Academy of Sciences. Both countries respect each other's policies and interests and have developed a mechanism for mutually respectful interaction. The conversation between them isn't on the same level as between Turkey and NATO or Turkey and other Western countries. It is not a conversation with a vassal state, but a dialogue between two equal powers. That is the secret behind effective bilateral cooperation, the expert told RT. Personal relations between the two leaders also play an important role, adds Nadine Raevsky. Putin considers Erdogan a real man who keeps his word. This is a new characteristic for the president of Turkey, but Erdogan has demonstrated loyalty to his obligations, he said. According to Amar Gagiev, another important aspect is that both sides comply with their obligations under binding mutual agreements. This was evident in the framework of the Syrian settlement, the agreements on Karabakh, and other issues in the context of bilateral cooperation, such as regional problems, trade, economic and energy cooperation, as well as cultural and humanitarian ties. And I do find it interesting here where this Nadine Raevsky says Putin considers Erdogan a real man who keeps his word. Then it says this is a new characteristic for the president, which sort of implies that he wasn't a real man before. And I'm guessing that maybe that would be an interpretation error, but it might not be. What do you think is being referred to here, Matt, and what are your final thoughts today?
Well, for the last year, Putin has been talking about Erdogan quite a bit. Because he's a Turkish nationalist, he's more Islamic than Turkey has been in the past, and he has condemned usury over and over again, which is, you know, in the midst of this economic crisis, one of the reasons why the banks of the West turned on him, and one of the reasons that he has taken over at least the central banking system. And why he refuses, and he will not allow interest rates to go any higher, for that, among many other reasons. This is something that Putin loves to see. This is what multilateralism is, sort of the foreign policy of nationalism versus the unilateral version of liberal imperialism. When you believe yourself to be the greatest of everything and have a right to rule the world, as the old British Empire, the Americans today think, you have no reason to keep your agreements. You're not bound by anything. You are the law. But in a multilateral arrangement that Putin, of course, has been advocating, there's far more incentive. Even the Chinese Belt and Road is based on this kind of thing. When you don't demand world hegemony on ideological grounds, that you are the end of history, you're the answer to all historical questions, which the American exceptionalist idea says, when you don't have that point of view, You're looking at your partners as equals rather than vassals. NATO, the U.S., even the EU, they can't see, especially a nationalist leader, like, for example, in Hungary or now in Turkey, you can't see them as equals. They don't see anyone as equals. Everyone's a vassal to them, and their only legitimacy, the only definition of democratic, you're a democratic country if you do what the IMF tells you to do. And because Erdogan rejects that in every way, especially today, Putin admires it. And that's why this is a huge nightmare for the Western liberal world.
Well, we'll obviously keep following what's going on there between Turkey and Russia. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.